Okay. So today's talk is on the treasure of Sangha. I keep a spreadsheet of talks going all the way back to, like, I don't know, 2018 or something. Every talk, every class, because otherwise I have no idea. And I will repeat myself. And apparently I feel compelled to give a talk on Sangha every 2 years or so. But I don't think that's too much. So, you know, there it is. So yeah, I do a little search in the spreadsheet. And there's Sangha. Okay. But this was inspired by, I just spent an evening and morning out at Great Bao Zen Monastery. And there was this cute little card on the bed table in the room that I was staying. And it was a calligraphy. I'm assuming it's a calligraphy by Thich Nhat Hanh. Because, you know, those Thich Nhat Hanh calligraphies, they all kind of look the same. I'm guessing it's by him. But anyway, it said, "Beloved Sangha, beautiful Sangha." And then there was a little quote. "My dream," this is a quote by Thich Nhat Hanh, "my dream is to build a Sangha, a real Sangha, a true Sangha, where there is harmony and happiness. My conviction is that if a Sangha has unity, harmony, and happiness, it can do everything it wants." And I should stop and mention, so Sangha means the Buddhist community, like a congregation in a sense, right? You know, somebody recently pointed out how many terms we throw around, just assuming everybody knows. Like, he mentioned, like, when he came and there was hardly anybody here and he found out everybody was at session, like, what's session? You know, we've been talking about it. Nobody told him. It's a residential retreat. Okay, so Sangha is the community. And I thought I would share a few more of Thich Nhat Hanh's words. So this is a... he's speaking to a bunch of people here. "My dear friends, happiness is not something you get from outside. To me, happiness is born from peace. With the practice of mindfulness, we can calm our body and our mind. Then peace and happiness become possible. The Buddha body is in us. Using the energy of mindfulness, we can touch the body of the Buddha within us and around us at any time. And I know the Sangha body is in me and around me. The trees, the grass, the blue sky, the flowers are all elements of my Sangha. And you are my Sangha body. You take care of me. In Vietnam, we used to say, when a tiger leaves his mountain and goes to the lowlands, he will be caught by humans and killed. When a practitioner leaves his or her Sangha, at some time she will abandon her practice. We have to take refuge in our Sangha, our community of practice. We cannot continue our practice very long without a Sangha. The art of Sangha building is crucial to our practice. If a Sangha is available in your area, please keep in touch and take refuge there. If the Sangha doesn't have the quality you expect, don't abandon it. Do not look for a perfect Sangha. Stick to the one you have and try, with your patience and your joy and peace, to improve its quality. This is very important. Our practice should be supported by the people around us, and we can learn how to support them in return. We support them by looking deeply so we can recognize the seeds of peace and joy and loving kindness in them. We touch these seeds, we water these seeds every day in order to make other persons bloom like flowers. And when these persons bloom like flowers, we all become happier. We have to help each other in our practice. The practice of meditation is not an individual matter. We have to do it together. It is possible, so there's a... according to Buddhist mythology, and to me, this means, like, I don't literally believe it's true, but it has truth in it. So the idea is that there have been many Buddhas through the ages, and Shakyamuni Buddha was just the Buddha of our age, and that in the future there will be another Buddha, and that's Maitreya Buddha. And he says it is possible the next Buddha will not take the form of an individual. The next Buddha may take the form of a community practicing understanding and loving kindness, a community practicing mindful living. So that's pretty famous quote by him, that maybe the next Buddha will be a Sangha. So, and to just take some time to reflect on the treasure of the Sangha, what is it really? What do we want it to be? How can we practice to nurture and take refuge in Sangha? We evolved in relatively small interdependent communities. I mean, life wasn't perfect in these communities, but and you know, such communities, small communities, can seriously constrain the individual. So that's why, you know, it's kind of nice to get out of your small town and get to the city where you can kind of have some anonymity and do what you want, and there's more diversity and all that. So it's not like, you know, we need to idealize that. And yet we did evolve in the context of these smaller communities, which in a sense, your personal life had a larger context than just you and just your immediate family or even your extended family. You were seen and known by many people as you walked down the street. You were known in a deep way that's only possible over a long period of time, right? People see you go through joys and struggles and over time. Your presence matters to others, you know, whether you show up. Your contribution matters. You're needed to play your part. People notice when you're in trouble and they kind of pull together and help you out. My husband likes to talk about how he spent his childhood in a very tiny town in upstate Michigan, and how just, you know, it's not like you loved everybody. There were, you know, difficult people and weirdos and whatever, but like you maintained a certain level of connection with everyone because you might be like stuck in the ditch in a blizzard when they're the ones who come by, or vice versa, right? Like you had a sense of mutual need and you needed to maintain some kind of, you know, some kind of respect and mutual accountability. So then the most, you know, supportive and strongest communities have always been those that share values or a particular culture or faith. And for most of us, with the exception, hopefully, of our Sangha, most of us have no community. If you do, you're pretty rare and lucky. We have our immediate family, maybe. Some people don't even have that. We have our extended family, maybe. Maybe we're alienated from them, or maybe, like me, I live, you know, thousands of miles away from them. So they're not a regular part of my life. Our neighborhood? I don't know my neighbors. I've lived where I live for 10 years. I like to think I'm a nice person, but I don't know my neighbors. I mean, I think if there was a difficulty in the neighborhood, I think, but then that'd be kind of, it wouldn't be cool, right? But on the way, like, that's one of the things, the surprising thing is to recognize the connections that we do have when, like, disaster strikes. And let alone our town or our city, right? I mean, most of us live over here at the Sangha, Dirt Sangha, live over here on the west side. I almost never run into anybody, like in a grocery store or anywhere, right? Like New Seasons is where I might run into people, but even then it's very rare. So, you know, it's very, we don't have much community. Some people have, you might have like kind of hobby or shared interest groups, and those can be great. But then kind of the deeper sense of mutual concern might be missing. So I love this, this definition of community by Charles Vogel. He wrote the book, The Art of Community, Seven Principles for Belonging. He defines a community as a group of individuals who share a mutual concern for one another's welfare. So he distinguishes that from a group whose members may share ideas or interests, proximity, any number of things, but lack concern for one another. So beyond our family or partner, who cares what we do? How we are, whether we fall off the radar, whether we're thriving, whether we die, whether we're contributing, who really knows us? So for many of us, Sangha is like our first and only encounter with this. Or, you know, maybe you've encountered it in other religious traditions. I mean, that's certainly the faith community. But I didn't belong to one before this, so this is the first one. So it can be very, very lovely. I mean, the people with social anxiety may have, you know, not go through the honeymoon phase and might actually be kind of a difficult thing to get engaged in. But for many of us who don't so much, you know, it's just like, no, let myself go. It's all wonderful. All these wonderful people. But then after a while, perhaps, we just kind of start taking the Sangha for granted. And I will confess that I am someone who, my default mode is to see the deficiencies in things. And in a way, it's a very useful mode. I take care of things. I fix problems. I see the problems, but then that's just, I just see the problems. So after a while, in my Sangha, I can only see the problems that I have with certain people or the ways that we do things or whatever. I was still involved. I was still dedicated to it, but I didn't have this kind of like, you know, so I'm always kind of surprised when I hear you all wax eloquent about like, oh, your friendly said it's so, you know, warm. And like, I'm like, I don't know that I ever waxed that eloquent about Dharmarain, even though it was, I'm sure it was just as lovely. But I think, you know, we all have our own journey. And I think kind of opening our hearts, you know, that's one of my 10 fields of Zen practice, and the Sangha is a great venue for doing that. So what is important, I think, is that we make Sangha a value, right? That we recognize it is one of the three treasures, Buddha, you know, our ability to awaken, the Dharma, the truth, the teachings, and the Sangha, the community. That it's necessary. And then we also take the 10th precept, do not defame the three treasures, includes nourish the Sangha. And for me, I translated all the precepts into kind of words that make sense to me. And mine was, do not blame the three treasures. You know, it's not that the teachings are deficient. It's not that the Sangha is deficient. You know, it's like, you've got to be responsible for your own practice instead of just like blaming the three treasures for your lack of progress. So to make it a value, to nourish it like a value, like caring for our children and our parents, our family members, partners, staying committed and in relationship. And in our culture, we are strongly encouraged to be self-centered, to just think of this as, what am I getting out of this? Do I enjoy it? Yeah, when I go on Sundays, like, well, I don't know. I don't know it was, but now, so not so much. Am I getting any, or I don't like the people so much, or they don't seem to like me, or people aren't supportive enough, or the teachings aren't what I need. So it's just like, I don't know. We could look at participating in Sangha just like we do, and like, I belong to this gym as long as I find it useful and it fits into my schedule. And then after a while, maybe not. Move on to something else. And that's okay. I mean, it's okay if people participate in Sangha that way, but it can be deeper than that. So if we aren't committed to Sangha as a value, as one of the treasures, we might drift away or go looking for the perfect community that doesn't exist. We'll go through another honeymoon period, but then realize a community's imperfections. And then we'll never put down deep roots and let people really get to know us. But if we stay, Sangha can become a central part of our practice. All of your social stuff will come up eventually, sooner than later, sometimes a lot sooner, sometimes later. You have an opportunity to work it out. Judgment, insecurity, anxiety, pride, arrogance, low self-esteem, abandonment, and trauma issues. Sangha becomes like family, for better or for worse, right? We also have shared values, at least, in theory, and a willingness to take responsibility for ourselves. So from the Kyoju Kaimon, our scripture on the precepts, we say, the precepts being our moral guidelines for life. We take refuge in the Sangha because its members are wise and compassionate. Sets the bar pretty high. Can we be wise and compassionate? So the wise means we have to keep working on our practice. And then the compassionate part. I mean, I thought I was so, I thought I was so right. But when I look back, I just think I was not, in a lot of great lack of compassion for certain people in the Sangha. And when I think about it, and this is really where like that practice of opening the heart comes in. When I think about it, for me, it was a matter of feeling threatened by them. And therefore, like it, when we feel like somebody's above us, like almost like compassion is something we give to people on our same level or below, right? You don't give compassion to those who you feel a little bit threatened by. We have a very different response to that. But I think as we get a bigger sense of ourself, as we gain more self-acceptance, we recognize like anybody can use our compassion, right? And that it can flow freely. Like, and a matter of fact, our compassion is probably needed most when somebody's being creepy, right? That's like exactly when somebody needs compassion. So it's very easy for me to have an open heart and feel compassionate and right way. I'm the teacher, and that's my role. So it just flows so easily to just give, compassion and acceptance and see your Buddha nature and all that. So it's just like, So, in order to have an open heart, I have to be the top of the pack. Well, isn't that interesting? So it's very humbling. And at the source, the Kyoju Kaimon says harmony is called the Sangha treasure. So what is harmony? As we look, one of the things that our Sangha wants to do is buy our own place. That's going to be of transition for our Sangha and decisions to be made and work to be done and things to communicate about. And, you know, it inevitably just brings up stuff. And, you know, how can we continue to do that harmoniously? Is a very central part of our practice. And in terms of how to be a good Sangha member, I guess, that wise and compassionate and working toward harmony, like this is the Friendship Sutra from the Pali Canon, very short and sweet. So it's about a good friend. A good friend gives what is beautiful and hard to give, does what is hard to do, endures painful, ill-spoken words. Trying to imagine, like, okay, so a Sangha member is kind of rude or mean or something at some point, and to endure that and to be patient instead of just being like, ah, everything to do with them, like, you know. His secrets he tells you, your secrets he keeps. When misfortune strikes, she doesn't abandon you. When you're down and out, doesn't look down on you. So I think that gets to the core of almost all, I would say all, but I can't verify that. Almost all of us have a fear, right? That if we really let ourselves, our true self, be shown, or if we really fall apart and we're not, you know, contributing and, you know, pulling our weight and earning our place and whatever, that people would reject us, right? And then we wouldn't belong anymore. If we get sick, if we get depressed, if we're not able to contribute. But when misfortune strikes, the good friend doesn't abandon you. When you're down and out, they don't look down on you. And there's many ways to be down and out, right? Like, I'm down and out when you're okay, you're sick, and that's straightforward, and we want to know if we can help you out. But down and out can mean, you know, that you're kind of withdrawn and unfriendly for a while, or that you're, I don't know, that you're kind of obnoxious for a while. Who knows, right? There could be lots of stuff going on. When you're down and out, don't look down. So can we do this for one another? What does this mean in an everyday practical sense? What does this mean in terms of how we grow this community? Our Sangha doesn't become beloved community all on its own. It requires the participation of each of us, doing our own practice. Another thing from the Kyoji Kaimon says, the Sangha is they who release their suffering. In the present, they who release their suffering are the treasure of Sangha. But it's like, I just love that for many reasons. One is like this sense of releasing your suffering, right? Like we're holding on to it. Like, it's not that the suffering is like, you know, but that we're actually holding on to it and we can go. So, you know, it points to that empowering aspect of practice that we can. It's not easy to find out how to let go of your suffering, but when you find out how, you can let go. And that in doing so, we are benefiting others. We are supporting the Sangha. And I feel like this, you know, was very, very true to my own experience, where as long as I was caught up in my own stuff, I was only focused on myself. And then the more free that I felt, the more I would kind of like look around and be like, hey, look at all these people. How are you doing? Like, you know, my sphere of concern could open up because I wasn't in so much pain. Releasing our suffering, patiently learning how to live in harmony with one another. you know, of just, you know, can we adopt the value that we want to stay involved and committed in Sangha? I mean, that'll change, you know, different phases of our life that may look different ways. Maybe more or less, you know, attending all the time or not, or retreats or not, you know, what things can change, but that we're going to stay committed for whatever that means for us, that we're going to try to really show up and be part, right? To take our place, not just to sit on the sidelines. I mean, you could sit on the sidelines if you want, that doesn't hurt, but real engagement with the Sangha means, you know, taking your place along with everybody else. You'd belong as much as anybody else here. All you have to do is claim your spot. Learning how to live in harmony with others, learning to see and accept one another, learning how to really start to pay attention to what's going on with your Sangha members and celebrate their successes. There's nothing, well, in terms of faith in the Dharma, your own experience will be first and foremost, right? Your own experience of additional insight and freedom and all of that. That's starts first. But then second to that is like recognizing the growth and the people around you. You know, like some of you were here for the workshop a couple weeks ago and Dharma Talk by Shanae, my Dharma sister. And, you know, like as she confessed in her talks, I mean, when she and I were practicing together in the early 2000s, I mean, she had, I wasn't the only one, but I was a companion for her through many panic attacks that happened right there in the Sangha, you know, right there. We have to go off and take her through that. And, you know, there was a lot, she had immense obstacles to overcome from a very traumatic past. And if she had any kind of self-consciousness I don't want anybody to be, you know, put out, or I don't want anybody to see that or whatever. But she was just so, maybe she had those thoughts, but she was so on fire for the Dharma and so determined that she was just going to do it anyway. And she did it. And now she's like a lay teacher. And like, it's just incredible. It's incredible to see the transformation that people undergo. And I hope people who know me think I went through a transformation too. So learning how to include people and not forget them. That's a big challenge for a Sangha. You know, we're naturally like, well, here's everybody who's here today. That's great. We can be nice to each other, but who's not here? How do we remember who's not here? It's difficult. We don't take attendance. Like sometimes, you know, some churches do. not only to shame you, but just because it's hard for us as human beings to recognize. And how long has it been since I saw that person? And maybe they're just on a trip, and we don't know. And maybe they're just taking a little break for right now, and we don't want to make them feel bad for that, right? But then something serious could have happened to somebody. And if they don't let us know, we can't support them. So that's why I'm very grateful for people who, like several of the people here, who just like use the Sangha email list to say, you know what? I'm suffering with this right now. Just wanted to let you all know. Doesn't necessarily mean that you're asking for something, although you can ask for something. Recognizing that everyone has their stuff as well. Because on the other end of the spectrum, we can kind of idealize people and imagine that person over there just really got it. And, oh, they're so smart and they always have something great to say and they never move in meditation and all this stuff. So so we imagine we're different from that person. But then if we are part of Sangha long enough, we recognize how they have their, everyone, no, nobody would be practicing if they didn't have their own stuff. And sometimes, you know, we all look different from the outside. I'm somebody who's never been able to hide anything. So it's all just been hanging out there. And it was really annoying when my Dharma brother Kakumyo, just so like stoic and tall and didn't look like he was bothered by anything. So, you know, I wanted to be like that, but I wasn't. But, you know, everybody has their path of practice. Yeah. So I will leave it there and we can maybe I can just ask you, I mean, if you have things to say about Sangha in general, that's fine. But in particular, I'm interested in, you know, suggestions and or, you know, from your own experience, things that we can do to create beloved community. Ruth Ann, do you have something?
Yes. Actually, I had been looking for a community about 2015, 2016, and I went to this downtown Portland church because they were holding an open meeting for Oregonians for alternatives to the death penalty, and I'm one of the members, and the minister said, oh, being a pastor of a big place like this is like herding cats. And I thought, oh, I'm sure he's right, but that's not the kind of leader, sort of spiritual person I'm looking for. And I know Obama, when he was president, said, don't get tied into personal politics. You know, don't just look at personality, but we're social creatures, and I'm delighted to be in a Sangha, Bright Way and Y East, because it is physically part of my community and the likeness of it, and I'm not making much sense, but, you know, if I like to read history, World War II, people got through difficulties by almost being underground with their worship, simply because that was safe. And it's just that we don't know what the future is. So to have the sanity and the reassurance of the ritual that connects us. Mm-hmm. And I look at words, so Buddhism is a way, and your brightness isn't just your intelligence, it's your humility. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruth. I mean, you remind me of, you know, I really want to invite Sangha members to, you know, if you want, I want to say, like Thich Nhat Hanh said, if a Sangha has unity, harmony, and happiness, it can do everything it wants. So I invite people to think with aspirationally about what our Sangha can be and do. There's really no limit to it. I mean, I would love for us to have a children's program again. Love for us to have our own home. I would love for us to have, honestly, I would love for us to have our own home in a large, not in a large part, but like for many reasons. But one of them is that is a place for y'all to come if disaster strikes. Like, I would want to be with you guys. If I mean, I don't mean to be all doomsday about it, but like, you know, if the next 10, 20 years things change and go downhill, right? This will remain. And not only that, this will become even more important. So this is something to rely on and to build. So that's, you know. Leah.
I don't have any answers. I have questions.
What?
I'm like, well, I have, you know, anyway, I wonder if, and I don't know what the way is, but I wonder if there's a way to, because you said, you know, we don't count noses, we don't take roll, but I'm just thinking about ways to when somebody is not here for a while. What's the right way to reach out to that person without being creepy or strange or like, you know, you can't read people's minds, but sometimes I perhaps have an overdeveloped sense of concern about like, what's going on with so and so? What's going on with so and so? Where did they go? What, you know, and I'm very, you know, concerned about all that. So anyway, I don't know. I've thought about it and I just don't
Well,
answer.
my answer to that, now I see the pro there's still a problem with like, well, how do we remember the people we don't remember,
Right.
right? Like, but the one thing I can say is like, if anyone has any thought like that, like, wonder where Ed went. Did you know? Just reach out. If you are a member, you have access to our member directory, and people will have put their emails and phone numbers in there. And in my experience, no one has ever been like, what do you get in touch with me for? Right? Like, and maybe they're just like, I've been traveling, or I don't know, I just haven't felt like coming or something. Nobody ever seems to feel put out for being approached like that. And matter of fact, what we've really tried to start to do is, you know, we will notice that somebody has signed up to be a member, and like we they've stopped donating or stopped attending. So basically, you can be a member two ways. You can attend, and maybe you can't afford to give. That's okay. You can give and you don't attend. You know, no skin off our noses if you don't want. We can do both, obviously. But if somebody hasn't been attending and their donation drops off, then what used to happen when it was just me and I didn't have help would just be like, but now we notice somebody notices, and then we have somebody, we our membership auditor, who is now Erica, but is going to be Zanko when she returns from Iceland. She's in Iceland, by the way. She's going to be gone for a couple months. So
Thank
there you go.
you.
There's one person we don't have to worry about. So she just reaches out. She just says, like, looks like your membership donation dropped off. Wonder if you meant that to happen. And, you know, if so, that's fine. Do you want to continue? And like, people really appreciate, you know, that they didn't just drop off the, you know, face of the earth and we don't even notice. Right. So we do follow up with that. So that's a start, at least. But I do mean, like Dharma Rain is a much bigger place, and they do have a Sangha support network. And so we can develop something like that. As a matter of fact, we want to. But even so, it's still difficult to keep tabs on everyone. So that's where I think we rely on just individuals noticing. So and so hasn't been here, and then just reaching out.
Just reaching.
Yeah.
Thanks for a reminder that the membership directory exists because
Yes. And that's another reason to become a member if you are not. Basically, you know, anything that we do is free for anybody to drop in. But if you kind of you want to be considered part of the community, then you can become a member. All that really means is like you say you make a regular pledge. It can be small or large, and we have your contact info. And we know you want to be part of the community, right? So that if we don't see you, then we get, because otherwise we might have any way to get in touch with somebody, even if they've been participating quite a lot and they disappear, we have no way of contacting them. Jessica.
So this is sort of aspirational, thinking ahead to when the Sangha has its own place. And this is going to be a bit self-oriented, so I apologize for that. So I know you're not founding a monastery that's going to have a dormitory, but it would be really nice if there were a couple of spaces for overnight guests so that, I mean, for people who are within driving distance, I'm like 6 hours away. I could come for a weekend workshop and not have to worry about Airbnb expense because it's a barrier. So that's just my aspirational, you know, rather selfish wish.
That is my aspiration as well. I mean, what we've decided pretty much, I mean, we haven't really gotten the new home committee up and running yet, but it looks like what we want to find is a church that retrofitting any other kind of space for our needs is not, you know, we have to have a sufficient parking and occupancy and all these kinds of things. So a church with like a house attached still, like what do they call them? Parsonage. A parsonage included would just be like perfect, just absolutely perfect. So, and if we own a place, like we could just, at Dharma Rain, they had, and still do have, like people come for retreats, they might just sleep in the Zendo. I did that many times when I participated at retreats there. So if we own this building and because we're paying more rent now, and there's just one tenant has, other tenant has one little room back there, we're getting closer to the point where I feel like we can just tell the owners, like, look, we're having people stay, right? But it doesn't have a shower and stuff like that, so we have some limitations, but.
Jill. I've just been sitting back there thinking about why I feel so much like Sangha connection pretty much from the get-go when I started here.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it is just the casual sort of friendliness of, I felt like there's a real effort people made just to visit a little bit. But the scale also made a difference because I really saw the same faces. But the thing that really I think has been the most impactful is doing the term student program, because I know those people now. And what was really cool is some of them are up there. Some of them are in here. And so I've been amazed at how the hybrid hasn't been a barrier. It's actually been like an opening for me personally, because I can do both, but also just... It's amazing that I feel like I know people in both places. So those have been really positive, important experiences.
Thanks for bringing it up. Yeah, the term student program, just in case anybody doesn't know, it looks like everybody probably does. But yeah, that's a program we do twice a year starting in like February, there goes 3 months, and then another one that starts in September and goes 3 months. And it's just a cohort of people, around 10 or 12 usually sign up. And you have an opening retreat where you basically tell your life story to each other. And then you have term vows for that duration of time for about 3 months, just your own, you decide what you want to do. And then the end ending retreat, you kind of check back in. How did the last 3 months or so go? And it is really Kyogen and Gyokuko created it. They still do it at Dharma Rain. It's amazing, and they really designed it in part because we're not in a monastery, right? Because we don't live with each other. If we lived with each other, we get to know each other, but we don't. So it's a great way to do that. Thank you. And that, you know, it also reminds me that this culture that we've created is needs to be carried by everyone. Right. It's not just that, like, I'm really friendly. That wouldn't cut it, right? So I'm not in the cloud breakout rooms. I'm not in the cloud when people sign on. I can't be everywhere at once. I might be giving an intro to somebody. So it's like it's everybody has that, you know. So I know that some people have that comes more naturally than others, but I like to think Kyogen and Gyokuko would say, like, if you have been here 10 minutes, you are senior to the next person who just walked in. Like, you might know where the bathroom is, right? So you have something to offer anybody who comes after you. I would love to see Brightway Zen get a Discord or Teams channel. Go for it. I mean, I think there might be plenty of us who are just kind of too old, and we just be like, "What's that?" But I mean, that's that in some ways that might like kind of might make our song help make our song a little younger if we had more things that appeal to younger folks. Choan.
Your talk reminded me of a conversation that I had with a Sangha member maybe a week and a half ago. They had noticed something a little off about me 2 years ago. And it's kind of like when you're with family and you were like, okay, did I upset them? Is something going on with them? And if you don't either share with family, with Sangha, with anybody, if you're not sharing, you're holding it inside. And or the other person doesn't feel comfortable enough to ask you, hey, what's going on? You know, that can be a breakdown in just communication and relationship, you know. When this conversation happened afterwards, I was like, God, what was going on with me 2 years ago? And the only thing that I could figure out was my best friend. One of my literally best friends had died. And I was handling the whole estate. And I was under a ton of stress. And so it didn't have anything to do with, you know, Sangha or anybody around me. It might have maybe in my interactions or something, I might have been stressed or tense. So your talk just really reminded me about when we're checking in with people, ask, you know, just opening conversation instead of just letting it sit for a while. I mean, I do it, you know, even with people at work or whatever, you know, you kind of go, God, what's their issue today? And you usually just walk away and go, whatever, instead of just in some compassionate or genuine, gentle way, asking them about it. So your talk just felt like it landed with me today. So thank you.
Yeah. And I should mention just, you know, I guess this is why I should talk about it every couple of years or so, right? That we do have a process for when there's some friction between Sangha members. Sometimes it's just kind of one way sometimes, but you know, it's usually not just in one person's mind, right? Usually there's some kind of dynamic. And you know, so it is a I don't know, I forget actually exactly what it's called. It's an empathetic listening process, right? And so I'm usually there as like the neutral third party, but it wouldn't have to be me necessarily. So it's just a process of one person starts and just says what's on their mind and speaks until the end, and they pause every minute or so for the other person to repeat back what they heard. So the other person has to be listening, and if what they repeat back, it doesn't quite get it, then the first person gets to clarify, right? So it's all about, clarifying what that first person has to say. Then when the first person feels like, okay, then the second person speaks. And there's no fancy set of rules about what you can say and what you can't say or anything like that. It's just very natural. And then the other person's repeating back, and it goes back and forth until both people basically feel like the process has run its course. And usually that is all that's required. Sometimes there might be some kind of request that people make of each other, but what it really helps us see is more clearly what's actually going on. Like you just reminded me that of Choa, of like somebody, for a couple of years, somebody's been carrying around some thought about like you, or maybe you have an issue or whatever, and not mentioning it. So we're getting these things out, and you get to see what's going on for somebody else. And sometimes you assume something that is just totally not the case at all. And you can be like, oh, okay, well, never mind. So we have more sympathy for each other. But that does need to be, you need to step forward and ask for that. And I kind of wish in some ways that my teachers had insisted that I do that with certain people. I kind of wish that I'd been sat down, okay, you and this person, all right. I mean, because of what we did instead was just kind of silo ourselves from each other, and that is kind of harmful in Sangha, right? Somebody had their hand raised. I mean, it's 12:16, but
Yeah, it was me, but it's already 3:16, so I thought.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, I'll try to be quick.
Okay.
So I'm from Brazil. I arrived here in North America last year in May. So and I'm from a small town in Brazil. So like I always had this sense of community because I grew up with that people. So like I knew all my neighbors, you know. And even before coming to North America, like I was giving like goodbye to every single day, like more than 20 houses. But I think when I was a kid, the thing that flipped the switch for me was that my mom, by the way, can you all hear me well? I forgot to
Yep.
check. Okay, thank you. My mom, she's a nurse, so she would take care of everyone there like that was in need, you know. And I would often help her. And there were like a lot of elder people. Many of them died in this past few years. And when I found myself in those situations where I had to help him or her to stand up to go use the bathroom, or even like help my mom shower her or him, these moments of like extreme need, all the barriers that would constrain you to connect to the other person just drop. Like you drop all the barriers. Like it doesn't matter their political opinion. If the race, the your self-interest, everything doesn't matter. It's just like a human being that is in front of you that needs your care. Like you're gonna help him or her or not. And so for me, charity, these moments of like helping people out, these moments were like the real moments that I resonate with myself when I think of community and I think of like opening my heart to someone. And that what I was resonating with during your talk. And it was a pretty good talk. Thank you.
Thank you. And that just reminds me to encourage people to accept help from the Sangha. I mean, I think almost all of us just would want to be independent. We don't want to be a bother, all of that, right? So, but at a certain point, we're really just holding out because of pride and depriving our Sangha members of that. You know, we talk about the emptiness of the three wheels, giver, receiver, and gift. That really, in that kind of situation, when that barrier falls away and we're responding and we're being able to contribute, it feels so wonderful. It feels like, wait a second, I thought I was supposed to be doing something for this person, but now it feels like they're doing something for me. So, all right. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water. Mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita.
Bye, everyone.